Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Welcome to The Urban Complex. All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or Amazon Web Services. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any decisions. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no further relationship with the podcast purposes than the sponsors unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Chris, here we are, another week. So what is top of mind for you this week?
Hey, Dom, I wish it was something amazing, although I did get back from Costa Rica recently, which was amazing, but now I'm back in this ridiculous heat. I think what hit like 114 yesterday. I was on a walk this morning, and I'm walking by this guy in this neighborhood. I don't know him, and he's like, oh, my gosh, it's so hot. And I'm like, he's like, when is this going to end? And I'm like, it's June, man. And I asked him, like, did you just move here? He goes, no, I've been here for 20 years. I'm thinking, you forgot that it happens every summer, but it's so hot. It's like you're walking in a constant air dryer, hair dryer at full heat.
Yeah, I mean, well, what time was it?
It was only 7:30, you know.
And what was it? It was probably already over 100.
Yeah, no, it was, that's what he says. Like, how's it already 100 and it's 7 a.m.? And it's like, yeah, it was brutal. Our guest today, I think, is in Colorado. I think this is the time of year that people want to get out of town. Who we have today?
Yeah, Thomas Vitak. He's a great guy. I've known him for quite some time. He's an incredible leader, executive director for the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance. It's a statewide smart city organization, and they've been just doing some incredible work. I've gotten to work closely when I was at my time at the Institute for Digital Progress, running the Smart Region here. And he's actually helping spearhead a national movement around regional smart city collaboration. So I'm sure we'll dig into that a little bit more. But he's just been a really great guy. He's always been a champion of collaboration, always been willing to meet, talk, discuss, you know, what they're doing and how they can potentially help us. So really excited to have him on the show and have him tell his story to our audience and see, you know, where new partnerships might be for him.
Yeah, it's great. I remember when we announced the National Alliance on the show, so it's going to be fun to dig in a little bit. So should we get him
on? Yeah, let's bring him on. Here he comes.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
All right, Tyler, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to the podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think you have the coolest backdrop I think we've seen. It's so nice and beautiful and lush, especially for us with 118 degrees here. You'd think it's a Zoom backdrop, but thanks for joining. We found the best way for our guests to build rapport is just to start with info about you. Kind of let the podcast audience know kind of what you've done in your background to get to this point, and hold off on your role with Colorado Smart Cities and Alliance for a bit, because we'll get to that and we'll dig in quite a bit on that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for the opportunity to come speak with your audience here. Been following you all for a long time, and I think this podcast is great. So a little bit about myself. You know, my name's Tyler Sweetock. I have been in the smart cities industry for most of my career, although I didn't know it when I started it. I wasn't necessarily called that, but you know, I think I've been in it for a long time. But my upbringing and kind of where my story starts is actually in Medford, Oregon, where I grew up. My dad was a whitewater rafting guide. and my mom was a social worker. And so I got a really interesting mix of a passion for the environment and a passion for people. And, you know, those kind of combined when I moved from Medford to Denver for school and got to live downtown and go to school at a really urban campus where I got to kind of understand the complexities of cities and the issues facing them, whether it's climate change or air quality and the politics involved and all of that. So I majored in environmental studies and political science. And then got right into climate change work, working to build the foundational policies as well as the programs to enable alternative fuel vehicles and what is now, you know, the electric vehicle industry. Back in 2011, when there were no electric vehicles on U.S. roads, the first ones were just coming to market, and there was a lot of work to be done to get us to today, where I think everyone realizes that EVs are today and the future. So I started there with the U.S. Department of Energy, a program called Clean Cities, and did that for 5 years, where I worked for the American Lung Association, was the director of air quality and transportation, and got a lot of experience trying to implement and bring things from theoretical to deployment. And that's where I spent most of my career, moving then from the city to the city and county of Denver, during the Smart Cities Challenge, which was a big $50 million prize I know you guys know about back in 2016. And I got to shape the way the city thinks about the future of transportation and partnership. And then most recently before here, I was at CDOT, our Colorado DOT, and I started the program on connected and autonomous vehicles, where at the time, CDOT was making a roughly $100 million investment over 6 years to modernize our infrastructure so our transportation systems can talk in real time with vehicles and vice versa. And so got to work on some really big projects there. And that whole thread, I think, throughout my career so far, and we'll talk about, of course, my role today, has just been working with the private sector to bring something into the public sector that can solve a problem. And there's a lot of fun and complexity to doing that.
Yeah, that's awesome, Tyler. And thanks for that background. I think our audience is going to see really a lot how your background has really led you into some of the exciting work that you're doing today that I know we'll dive into here in a little bit. But, you know, we've gotten to know each other over the years. It's been fun and an honor to work with you. So I thought that was interesting. You were kind of working in the smart city space before they were even calling it smart cities. So, you know, this is a podcast around smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. So what we'd like to do is ask our guests, you know, would you mind talking to us about your perspective of smart cities? How do you define it? How do you view it? Think broadly for now, and then we'll, of course, start to, you know, dive really deep into some of the stuff you're doing. But we always love to get the perspective of, you know, what is a smart city to you, Tyler?
Sure. I love this question. I get it a lot. I think the industry is plagued by the desire to have a uniform definition of what a smart city is, and I actually don't think there needs to be one. And the way that I try to define it may not be super helpful in being specific, but there are three things that I believe smart cities do. They apply innovation, they apply technology, and they apply partnership to solving a complex issue. Or more simply, smart cities use emerging technology for good. And I think those three things are important because innovation is accepting that what has been done in the past is not working. And so it involves risk. It involves trying new things that is not normal for government. It involves technology because that is where the newest tools are for our governments to use in solving these problems. And it involves partnership because governments are not very good at technology. And in order to develop new solutions, it requires lots of stakeholders to be at the table in order to ensure that solution works. And so if a project involves all three of those, in my opinion, it's absolutely a smart cities initiative. But you know, I think that is my experience through what I've done. It has little to do with whether there's connectivity and data and, you know, like the traditional definition, and more to do with those three elements.
Yeah,
love it. Love the background, love the definition. make sense the logic of how you bring that in. So let's not make any assumptions here that our audience has heard of Colorado Smart Cities Alliance. So why don't you walk us through what it is and how it got started?
Sure. So the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance is a 501c3 nonprofit. And, you know, our mission is to create technology partnerships that develop and prove the next generation of solutions to the quality of life in our state. And what's important about that is, one, we create technology partnerships, meaning we work across sectors in order to identify needs throughout our state with our government members. So we have about 30 different local governments that we work with that are members of our organization. And we take the needs and challenges that they're facing, provide a market level perspective on those, and find solutions in the marketplace, whether they're from the private sector or from academia. And it's our job to find a way to test and demonstrate those things with a government partner. So we have lots of programs and structure for how we do that. But at the end of the day, our outcome are partnerships that are testing things in the real world.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you, I want to kind of double click on this because I'm a little bit of a, you know, governance nerd. And I know a lot of our audience that are maybe starting their smart city journey or are trying to figure out how do they organize, how do they structure. So talk to us about the structure of the 501c3 and how you're organized. And maybe in particular, you know, it's difficult to get government and private sector sometimes at the same table together. Talk about maybe your board, you know, just overall, how did you structure it in case, you know, there's someone out there listening that might want to do something similar in their region?
Yeah, well, this actually goes back to part of the question that Chris just asked me I didn't answer, and that is how we got started. And, you know, this organization was started about 5 years ago by an economic development organization called Denver South, which represents the Denver Tech Center area, as well as five jurisdictions in that region. The private sector, so some large technology partners that wanted to work more with cities. And they discovered a need, and the need was we have really pressing infrastructure issues that our state, and I know others across the country, including Arizona, are growing. We have these needs today, and they're huge. And if we're going to in any way improve them with more people coming to our state, we needed new tools in order to approach these issues. And one of the tools was the neutral space to collaborate between public and private to look at what's available and to push things forward and advocate for action and testing and innovation and technology and partnership that I mentioned earlier. So there was no table to do that at the time. MPOs and TMAs and other things that have been around, but well, we can dig into that in a second. There wasn't this type of organization. And so that's how we got started. And our governance reflects what we believe we needed in order to build trust with government to work with us, right? And so we have a board of directors. It's 11 people, and six of them are representing public jurisdictions that are innovation or champions for innovation within government. So, you know, Ryan Trujillo, who I know has been on your show, is the chair of my board, the deputy chief of staff for the city of Colorado Springs. Julie Richman is the deputy executive director of OIT for our state. And so there are six cities and then five nonprofit organizations and universities that make up the leadership of our organization and makes decisions about what we do and how we do it. And that is purposefully excluding the private sector because unfortunately there is a bad taste in a lot of government's mouths that the private sector is trying to sell them things they don't need. And so to keep governments engaged, which is the core of our work, our governance also reflects a trustworthy source.
Mm. And to that last point, especially in this world of smart cities, I think a lot of the name smart city came from the vendor community to push. So that makes a lot of sense. It's actually a great segue on your nonprofit or university side into another question. You know, we've had, I mean, I work at a university, Arizona State, but we've had a lot of our guests that have had similar success with universities. Tell us about how you all leverage them for their role in the smart cities strategies and how they're part of the ecosystem for the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance. How do you engage them? any examples of something you think is unique that others can learn from would be great.
This is a great question and one I could talk about for a long time. So I'll try to be succinct, but also specific.
We've got some time. We may dig in. So who knows?
In terms of how we're working with universities. So first of all, the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance is housed. So our office is at the University of Colorado Denver, which is right downtown Denver. And so for the last year, we've had an MOU with them that lays out specific things that we want to do together. One of them is using the campus as a living laboratory, where, you know, this is an urban system, right? A university. It has tens of thousands of students on campus. It happens to be right in the center of, you know, an urban metropolis in Denver. And so we want to leverage that ecosystem in order to test ideas and solutions and hopefully grow them into successful companies and scale them through our network. And so a couple of living lab examples. You know, we can't talk about all the details yet because things are still being finalized, but one of the visions that we have is to deploy some really advanced 5G infrastructure on campus and to create some incubator and accelerator programs for smart cities companies to come to develop and test in the university, to hire students into their workforce pipeline, and then to leverage the alliance to find cities that are willing to test and then hopefully scale those solutions and create the whole ecosystem from, you know, seed to implementation. And so that's one. And another very tangible example is not even with CU Denver, it's with the Colorado School of Mines, where I think we'll dig into this later, but we deployed one of the nation's largest fleets of highly automated all-electric shuttles into public transit service with the Colorado School of Mines, used their students actually as the onboard customer service ambassadors so that they could learn how automated technology works, and you know, took a huge step for the industry. And so that's one way, using the campus as a lab.
Yeah.
A couple other ways.
I have a quick question. This is great. And obviously feel free if it's too far out, or speak in generalities if it's proprietary. But I'm curious, these ways to get moving, right? You've got this incubator, you've got this 5G infrastructure coming. If I heard you correct, you get the students involved, you get the companies involved, you start testing, and the plan is then for full deployments. And I want to dig into that. Do you see the path for the full deployment, or is that still kind of TBD? Meaning, do you know who's going to fund it? Do you know how we're going to get there? Or are you still at a place where there's still so much to figure out that it's kind of just, you know, that's the ultimate goal and you're not exactly sure to get there yet?
So that's a really good question. It's one thing to take an idea. It's another thing to actually figure out how to do it, right? In this case, I can't talk about the specifics because it's still in negotiation, but we have found a way to build that vision, and we hope to do it over the next
years. I got the sense of that, and that's been the holy grail of moving from test to full deploy. We've seen test to some deploy, but yeah, it'll be interesting to follow on that. So we'll keep that in our notes, and maybe that's a great yearly check-in when you've made big waves. So.
Well, and to clarify, you know, I think the vision to build that infrastructure and the ecosystem, and the programming to support it, that's what I think we've at least figured out and now we have to go do. The scaling beyond that living lab to cities and into a regional scale to solve an issue like air quality or something else, of course, that is absolutely still in development. And that's what the Alliance was built to do. So right. In a lot of ways, the Alliance is the vision and still we're building it. But one of the ways we think and we created structure to increase the success that those outcomes happen at scale is that you need to design the project or the pilot at a small scale to test all of the barriers you expect to have at commercializing or scaling the big thing. So if you just want to put a LiDAR sensor in an intersection and test it, that is an accomplishment in some ways. But if you aren't testing and design the project to overcome the policy or regulatory barriers, to, you know, look at the use cases that are scalable. Like, that's what we try to preach in our work with cities, is let's scale the pilot so that you have meaningful outcomes from it in order to hopefully use it, if it works, at a larger scale.
Yeah.
Which goes back to your innovation, technology, and partnership. You help you define all those elements, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I just love the structure of that vision. I mean, you've got economic development, right? New products being developed, new maybe companies being developed from students. You've got the workforce development effort, right? With actually students leveraging what they're learning on campus with this technology. Then of course, you know, you're solving a challenge for, you know, a municipality, a campus, even a region, regional ecosystem. So, you know, I love that structure, and yeah, I look forward to watching it come to life. You know, and you mentioned it, you know, industry, that there's previously kind of a bad taste. So there still might be, you know, a bad taste with industry partners just trying to sell widgets to cities. But, you know, as we mentioned, cities don't know everything, right? They're sometimes not the leading technical experts. And so there's obviously a role for industry partners to play, right? Helping these governments understand the latest technology, at hiring students, and even just enabling us to understand the art of the possible. And so, you know, doing the research, we saw that the Alliance has a really exciting partnership with Aero Electronics. Can you talk to us about that relationship and about their open lab that they have with you guys or next to you guys?
Sure. I think this is one of my favorite topics to discuss, is the need for, but also the challenges associated with public-private collaboration. And anyone who's done it, you know, it understands the complexity. But in this case, we saw a couple of specific barriers. One, governments are not innovators. They do not have the R&D department that, you know, a company does. They don't have engineers that are responsible for designing these things. Everyone within government generally, right, has a day-to-day job, and outside of that scope doesn't really fit. And so in the case of Aero, we said, look, they, you know, Aero does a lot of things. I don't know how familiar your audience is with them, but specifically they're engineering experts, right? So they can take products from a bunch of different places, put them together into a new product, and help, you know, a specific customer. And in this case, we wanted to turn that customer into the government. So we built together what's called the Colorado Open Lab. And this is an IoT product development laboratory at the headquarters, the first floor of the headquarters building of Aero Electronics. And governments that are members of the Alliance have access to the physical space where there are multiple new IoT technologies being exhibited, the art of the possible, but there's also a ton of lab and bench space to take something from idea or concept to a full prototype and testing in the lab. And the engineering resources at Aero are also available to these governments. So if they come to us and say, look, if a local government comes to us and says, look, I have this problem with air quality, I want to understand what types of tools are available to me, and I would like to potentially pick a solution with Aero to test and demonstrate. They can walk them through that whole design thinking process, recommend a neutral approach on what drone or what cloud backend and whatever, and help them go to action.
Wow. No, it's like mind blown. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
The lab is amazing. And I think anyone that's looking to build a lab, one thing I would say is just ensure that you also have the capacity and programming around the lab to ensure it's activated, right? Yeah. Because we have an amazing resource, and then COVID hit. And so now we're trying to regain the activation of the space, but it's an amazing resource. And we've got multiple governments using it. So
in activation, you mean specifically what?
So it's one thing to build a lab and tell people they can use it. It's another to have
The ecosystem of usage and the way by which you can see what's going on and the way to plug in the different parts of the ecosystem so that it's working as intended. Is that kind of what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like, how is the lab going to be used? Who's ensuring it's being used, and who is providing the outlets for people to plug into, right? And that's our job as the Alliance, having co-developed this lab with Aero.
All right. Well, let's continue to get the audience excited about the Alliance and the great work you're doing. What do you want to highlight and make sure, especially with your background, I'm sure this one's right up your alley, is to make sure we learn what the Autonomous Vehicles Colorado is, AVCO.
Sure. Yeah, so many things that I hope we have time to discuss, but you know, specifically AVCO, or Autonomous Vehicles Colorado, is a program that we developed a little more than 2 years ago to take two really important and promising technologies, the automation of transportation and the electrification of the transportation sector, that have, you know, huge potential for improving safety, for reducing the cost of public transit, for reducing emissions and improving air quality and climate change, but hasn't really seen a lot of momentum in the public transportation space. Been a lot of pilots, been a lot of testing, but in terms of commercial deployment and fleet-based scale, we didn't see a lot of opportunity. So what we did is we spent about 18 months developing a project framework that would be able to take today's technology in terms of level 4 automation and, you know, battery electric vehicle technology, and what use cases or problems could today's technology actually solve at scale. And in this case, we found 3 different use cases that we thought that this technology was ready to move that next step and go to a fleet as opposed to a 1 or 2 vehicle deployment. And so we worked with 3 different cities on those 3 different use cases, on a first and last mile to transit use case, on a campus circulator use case, and on a downtown circulator use case, and really baked those projects over the course of, like I said, about 18 months. And then in the case of one of those 3 so far, we were able to move to real deployment. And that was at the Colorado School of Mines in the city of Golden last year. In August, we put 7 highly automated level 4 shuttles into mixed traffic public transit service, and operated that service for, well, we didn't, the School of Mines did, for 6 months, and learned a ton and that will inform, hopefully, our future deployments in other cities testing different use cases as the technology matures.
That's awesome. And talk to us about, how do you share like the data, or the best practices, the lessons learned, how amongst your government members, what does that look like through the Alliance? How are you communicating kind of the results to your stakeholders?
Well, I do a lot of these. I do a lot of presentations and talking. But you know, we recognize that whenever we built this project, we had 3 goals. 1, to scale the technology and in different use cases. 2, to build a living laboratory, so that if we could do that, there are a lot of other complementary things that we could also be testing with the environment that we create. So kind of a living lab model. And then 3, to educate really the world about what we've done here, because we've seen so much replication and recreation of the wheel, people spending, you know, $500,000 to buy their own shuttle and learn their own lessons when everyone's learning the same thing. So we built what's called the City Forward Playbook. And this is a very detailed practitioner's guide to every step of the process, from concept all the way through evaluation of what we did based on a real deployment. And you know, I think that's going to be a great resource for jurisdictions that are considering doing this, to hopefully skip a few steps and save some money and be ready for taking the next step.
You call it the City Forward Playbook?
Yes.
And where do you find it?
Well, hopefully if you search City Forward AV Playbook, you'll find it, but it's on our website there, and as well as Stantec, who is our partner in building that playbook.
Great. Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, that's so incredible. I mean, I think our audience will appreciate, I mean, just being able to leapfrog or fast forward their own projects and not have to start from ground zero with no understanding, that's just going to be such an incredible resource for governments everywhere. So we definitely applaud you in taking that leadership and actually building that playbook. So that's wonderful to hear. So Tyler, we were doing the research on some of your programs, and this one was particularly interesting, especially for me here in Arizona. As you mentioned, we're growing fast. We're getting a lot of manufacturing facilities coming to town. And unfortunately, you know, you look out at the sky and it's becoming more and more, you know, dirty looking in the sky. It's foggy a little bit. And so we noticed that you have an air quality program with schools. Can you discuss with us what the Alliance is doing around the Denver Love My Air program, I believe it's called?
Sure. Yeah. And I'll just clarify and to make sure that no one thinks it's our program. So this is the City and County of Denver's Love My Air program. But we have been working with them since they started this. I'll describe the program first. So one of the issues with air quality is that it can be dramatically different at hyperlocal scales. So, you know, air quality has been monitored and visualized at a pretty macro regional scale for a long time. But the city felt a need to give very local, accurate assessment of what air quality is on the ground. And in this case, they wanted to focus on children and specifically children with asthma and children of color who have been disproportionately impacted by the terrible outcomes of air pollution. So they created the Love My Air program. And at this point, I'm with some support from Bloomberg Philanthropies. And at this point, I believe they have 40 different air quality monitors located at Denver Public Schools throughout the city. And we have worked with them to say, look, you have built an amazing program. To do this, you had to develop curriculum. You had to develop a community engagement strategy to educate the public about what air quality is and why it's important and what you can do with it. You had to custom design their sensors so that they were solar powered. And they built a data backend as well as an app, a customer facing app, in order for this program to be successful. And so we're just working with them to replicate what they have done. And as a result of our conversations, they ended up licensing use of the Love My Air program. So if it's, you know, Love My Air Colorado Springs or Love My Air, you know, some other city, you can license this and skip all of that data backend, you know, programming and curriculum development and branding, and just leverage this program that the city has developed. And in this case, they have multiple government partners now, including the City of Colorado Springs, that have licensed the playbook.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wow. I mean, what an exciting project. And this is what I would love to just quickly, you know, discuss with you. It's about, you know, you at the Alliance, you can either kind of lead and really drive a project forward, or you can come alongside an already existing program, help amplify it, right? Help share it. And then you can obviously work with, you know, the private partners like Aero and then the university partners. So talk to us. I mean, talk to us about that unique role as a 501c3. And I think it's going to, you know, where I'm going to take this with what you're doing at the national level. But just talk to us in your perspective, why that 501c3 is so important to help drive smart cities forward.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think the entire industry is relatively gray and complex, and most jobs and most organizations, including cities, have a very specific focus, right? You're the Department of Transportation, you focus on transportation. You know, your public health, you focus on public health. In our case, we get to sit across all of the issues and we get to sit across sectors. And so we get a really unique perspective on what's happening, what's important. And it's our job to pay attention and to provide capacity that was not there before to the region. And so we have a lot of flexibility with what we can do. Way more flexibility than the private sector who has to make money, or the public sector who, you know, has to not spend money, right? Or at least not too much of it. And so I think we provide a really important lens for the state to identify opportunities and then do whatever it takes in order to develop that project or that partnership, whether it's go seek funding, whether it's be a project manager, whether it's just be a connector, which is a lot of what we do. Our interest is just in seeing more momentum in this space happening and in more solutions being identified. So that's awesome. It's fun.
And that's what I just find so fascinating, especially about all the success you've had. And, you know, I really love, I mean, you've even been able to go to the state legislature and kind of discuss the need for technology and innovation in government, right? I mean, that's the kind of leadership you're seeing in Colorado.
Yeah, I think we have identified a need that wasn't obvious or apparent before we started addressing it, right? And so the momentum that we have is really strong. But of course, in order to really make the impact that we want, there's still a lot of work to be done and a lot of scale to be had.
Awesome. That's great. And then, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you the question, you know, now you've taken it to kind of the national scale. I know we discussed this with Jen Sanders when she was on, but anything you want to highlight about the, you know, National Smart Coalition's partnership and how you're kind of leading that organization?
Yeah. So turns out the need that was here in Colorado is also shared across the country, and a lot of other nonprofit regional government innovation groups are doing similar work to us here in Colorado. And so about 2 years ago, we all started meeting to exchange ideas, to figure out how we might work together, to help each other. And through that, you know, natural volunteerism, because none of us are getting paid for this, we decided to form a new national organization called the National Smart Coalitions Partnership that will essentially provide even greater scale and greater visibility to the work that we're all doing in about six regions across the country. And I happen to be president of the board for the organization, and really excited to be doing this work nationally now.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. Well, thanks for the leadership on that. That's terrific. So, you know, Tyler, before we get into kind of our last two questions, the standard questions we ask every guest, are there any other projects, initiatives coming down the pipeline that you just want to highlight and discuss and tell our audience about?
Yeah, there is one really amazing program that we figured out 3 years ago that we're starting again this year that I want people to know about. This year, we're calling it the Connected Colorado Challenge, or CSCORE Challenge. And this is an innovation challenge at its core, except it's one that unites multiple governments. So last year, we had 10 city or state governments participate in identifying a problem that unites each of them. And instead of defining the exact requirements of what they want and specifications, they're taking a step back and saying, look, we know that there's a problem, but we are open to new ways of solving that problem. Send us your best ideas. And the outcome of the process is the opportunity to scope and demonstrate the solution with the jurisdiction. And so this year, we have four problem statements that we'll be advertising. Actually, right now, it's available on our website, around community resilience, around housing affordability, around, oh gosh, now I'm forgetting the last two. Oh, traffic safety, transportation safety, and one other one that I am forgetting at the moment. But the application will open on June 30th to submit ideas for the chance to work with one of the governments here in Colorado, and we hope people submit.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love it. We'll make sure to promote it through our social when we launch it. But this is great. Really excited for that.
Yeah, and in closing, we have a couple questions we find that potentially bring our guests to share something and potentially bring our audience to kind of help. One of which is, you know, as you're doing this, what help do you need to do more? Is there anything out there that if, you know, we made connections, we've had guests meet each other, or maybe some sort of talent gets exposed and then people get placed. What can we do to help, or can our audience do?
I appreciate the question. You know, the limiting factor to the success of our work is really one thing, and that is the capacity for government to engage in this type of work. And so the more governments that we can have in our alliance that have a culture that are willing to identify new ideas, to have the process for implementing them, and really buy into the vision that we share here, the more successful we'll be. But to do that and to engage with more governments, of course, we always need more support. We need capacity to do that ourselves as a nonprofit. And so, you know, as a small nonprofit, I feel like I'm probably, you know, echoing what a lot do, but, you know, I think the biggest thing that people can do is find partners that are aligned with this mission. We aren't trying to sell a specific product, but believe that the ecosystem that we build here can benefit everyone
and be willing to support models like this, you know, financially as well as with other sorts of resources. So if there's anyone out there that believes that, then I'd love to talk to them.
So more that lean in, but not so much so that they strip you in the ability for your small team to contribute for the success. That makes sense. Is there anyone that you want to particularly appreciative of that's helped you along the way? I mean, we know we can't do this podcast ourselves. We've had so many great people that helped us. And selfishly, if they're a potential speaker, a guest on the Urban Complex, we'd love to know that too. So help us understand who's helped you along the way.
Oh my gosh, so many people have helped me along my way. But, you know, in one of them, you have already had on your podcast. So I won't mention Ryan, but I would say, you know, well, three people come to mind, but I'll start with one, Julia Richmond. So she is, she used to be the Chief Innovation and Technology Officer for the City of Boulder. She's now the Deputy Executive Director for the Office of IT at our Governor's Office. And, you know, she is responsible for figuring out how the state can implement more effective IT infrastructure, including, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars of broadband infrastructure funding coming to our state. And then once the networks are built, how can we use them to improve government? And so she's just an amazing human being, a great person, a good personality, and a leader in government. I'd highly recommend you talk to her. If you need more than that, I have a couple others as well.
That's great. Well, let's hope our audience loves this as much as the squirrels that are running on the backdrop of your fence back there. But with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Tyler Spadak, Executive Director of the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance. Thanks for joining us, Tyler. It's been amazing.
Thank you so much for having me and for highlighting this work.
You bet. See you soon.
Bye.
Support for this episode of the Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Okay, Chris, that was Tyler. What'd you think? Awesome, right?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you've been talking about the work he's been doing for quite some time. It's just great to have him on the show. And it builds off of the work that Ryan did with, you know, the city of Colorado Springs. Plus, it leads in. We got a governor coming up, Bill Ritter. So it's going to be kind of a lot of Colorado talk currently. I think where I'll start is, I saw you light up too, was just the definition. Very refreshing. You know, it's got what that innovation, technology, and partnership lead, and using that emerging tech for good. I think what resonated with me is that, you know, the things that have worked in the past, they're holding cities in the same place. And he's basically saying some of it is working, but it's not necessarily working to take them where to go, and that involves risk. And so that's the innovation piece, and then of course tech can be the bridge, but often the government isn't good at tech. And, you know, we've seen this from the kicks you now lead of, like, how do you kind of catalyze, how do you bring the mindset, how do you get things moving? And it's the partnership, and it's the way to kind of get folks to take action that actually reduces risk. That's the funny thing. We had one person on here. The author of The Seat at Table, that you can actually reduce your risk if you get started in change and you start iterating, rapid prototyping, taking small bites, and then you next thing you know, you've got some big efforts. But it doesn't feel that way at the time when you're stuck in the past.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant, and I think it was Sherwood too. Probably talked a little bit about that with, you know, all the pilots he does in Vegas. But yeah, great points, Chris. I mean, I really loved how he was able to lay it out and apply innovation, technology, and partnerships. It was so simple, so easy to comprehend, so easy to understand. I think it's a great formula for mayors, city managers, CIOs that are looking to really get going on the smart city journey, for a kind of a broad framework of how to really kind of wrap their arms around what is smart cities and how do you communicate it to, you know, your internal teams, your external stakeholders as well. I mean, and what I really loved about it is, you know, everyone on this podcast, every guest has basically said, it's not about the technology, it's about the challenge. It's what issue are we trying to solve? And I love that he used apply innovation as, hey, innovation means that something isn't working, and so we need to figure out a new way, a new process to do something. And so he naturally is saying, start with your challenge, but he's putting it in a way, as we all know, governments don't usually like to say, hey, here's my challenges or here's my issues.
We don't have problems.
Right? So he uses it in a way as apply innovation. So I thought that was really good. And just a brilliant formula to use.
Well, it also uniquely positions the why they exist. And because, you know, when he was talking about what the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance is, you know, he talked about their mission is to create smart city partnerships that lead to quality of life for the state. And the opportunity was them because the government didn't necessarily have the capability and they didn't necessarily have the ability to test. And so that's what the partnership brought together. So if you have the innovation, the technology, and the partnership and the convening, they can convene these things, whether it's a challenge or not. I thought it was really unique how they actually work with the University of Colorado Denver too, right? They're physically on their campus. They've got a convening place, neutral space to collaborate between the publics, the privates. The way the board is set up, they've got, you know, 11 members that represent different cities. Then they got they've got six champions representing the cities. They got five representatives representing the nonprofit organizations, the universities. They keep the private sector at bay, but they bring them in when they have something to deploy on the campus or to roll out to one of the cities. And they kind of have this constant iteration, and it's really neat. And then, you know, we heard a couple of the really unique outcomes of kind of the 5G, so they can lay out the infrastructure. We got the School of Mines that really went big on the all electric shuttles. I mean, 7 fully autonomous vehicles out there in the mix with everything. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's just cascading, building. You know, I know I kind of pushed to see the big plan because that's what's been missing for lots of us is the full deploys, but you can tell they're close. And so that's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that structure, that vision for that program with the university is going to be really exciting. Because I think you're right. I think they do. They're probably the closest ones to having all the pieces, right? If they're able to build the infrastructure on the campus, have students test it, have private industry test it, then they have the alliance of cities engaged throughout the whole state for potential, you know, full-scale deployment. So it's going to be really fun to watch. And, you know, I think he's doing a great job. And I think it just goes to highlight how incredibly important these sorts of outside, independent, usually 501c3 organizations are to really helping drive smart city efforts forward, right? Because how many times did he say governments don't have capacity, industry struggles to understand how to work with you know, the government, and then universities, how do you get innovation outside the campus boundaries? And so I just think that's why organizations like the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance are so incredibly important. And if anyone out there is thinking about starting, you know, and really galvanizing a region, a state around smart cities or just around emerging tech for good, as he mentioned, really dig into the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance model and structure, because I think it's a good framework for cities or regions anywhere to really model. And I think that's why him really helping to galvanize and lead the National Smart Coalitions Partnership is so incredibly important. I think mark my words, I bet that organization is going to grow pretty quickly here.
Well, it seems like a lot set up for success there too. A lot of the players we've had on the podcast, whether it's us in Arizona or folks in Texas, got Colorado, you got the ones on the East Coast. So a lot of players that are coming to play to make that a reality.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have to follow up with them and get the update on that university project. Really excited to see it. So for let's shift to cracks in the pavement. What do you got for us this week?
Well, it's just kind of a catchy tagline, and there's probably still a lot to figure out, but I'm sure everyone's heard of NIMBYs, not in my backyards, people that are afraid of change and they don't want the growth. But this article is called Meet the YIMBYs. So it's the yes in my backyards. And, you know, it's a really interesting context because, you know, we know any city that's growing, both two things are happening. It's happening here in Arizona. We know what's happening in Colorado. We know what's happening on the East Coast, places like Florida and Georgia, Charlotte. You know, it's just rents and home prices are outstripping the people's ability to afford them. And it's causing a lot of downstream impacts like homelessness and whatnot. And so what's interesting here is talking about the ways by which the real estate developers, I mean, obviously they want to find an affordable plan, but they need a place to put it that people are going to allow it to happen. The thing I thought was really interesting in the article was just that everyone now knows someone that's struggling with keeping up with their rent, keeping up with their housing prices, trying to find a house. Maybe they're in a smaller rent, but their family situation changed, trying to find something. And you know, you throw in now with interest rates going up, it's just you know, there's like a triple whammy. You've got the inflation, you've got the actual, you know, of other goods, you've got the interest rates, and you've got the goods of the rent or the house going up, just really putting a lot of pressure on the average citizen.
Yeah. This is actually such a timely article because, I mean, you know, the market here in Arizona, it's a little bit wild as well. I love this quote. It's 5, 6, 7 years ago, I would go into a neighborhood meeting or zoning meeting, bracing for everyone to be screaming at me for what a terrible thing I was doing to the community by building housing for people who sweep the floors of my kids' schools or serve coffee in the local Starbucks. I mean, wow, what a powerful statement that is, right? Because that's how it was. I mean, when I worked for the city council, I mean, planning and zoning meetings were some of the most contentious meetings we had to deal with. And yeah, it's exactly right. And I can't remember who I was speaking to. It might've been Lev Gonick, the CEO of ASU, talking about what a challenge it is to have people actually be able to live close by to where their jobs are. Because especially with gas prices nowadays, right, you can't work in a minimum wage job and live
or let alone then the same people having the NIMBY response are going to be pissed off. Their traffic has gotten ridiculous because they can't get there because so much has bottlenecked. I mean, unfortunately, we're going to have to start building up, especially in the Valley, if we want to maintain the growth. Or what happens when you're not building and you're not adding more rent, like that costs go up because there's more demand. People want to be here because of the other times of the year when it's not 114. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out and see what creative solutions come to the forefront.
Yeah, I like that tagline though, YIMBYs.
YIMBYs. I think we need more, but it's tough. People, you know, people that have views, next thing they don't want to lose that view. That's why they bought the place. You know, people that have the access to parks without a lot of density, that's what they want. So it's going to be a funny balance, but it's definitely something people are seeing the adverse ramifications. I mean, these tent cities and places, we know we've got some downtown. I've seen it in Seattle where I grew up. California, we've heard of the horrors of San Francisco. Like that's what we don't want in places. We need as a passion to let get the market to kind of stabilize.
Yeah, it's wild. It's going to be interesting.
All right. Well, that's a wrap. We'll see you soon.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, Smarter Cities for a Stronger Tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.